Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into Jacob's life,
Oh, yeah.
specifically his return to Canaan after 20 years.
Okay.
We'll be looking at lesson 15 from this Pentateuch
All
study.
right.
It covers Genesis 33.18 through 37.1.
Gotcha.
Buckle up for some serious family drama,
Oh, boy.
risky returns,
Oh, yeah.
and some seriously thought-provoking questions about faith and obedience.
It really is fascinating how this part of Genesis mixes personal journeys with this like grand sweep of history. You know,
Yeah.
Jacob, now known as Israel, isn't just coming home.
Right.
He's retracing his grandfather Abraham's steps and claiming his inheritance.
Wow.
But as we'll see, living up to that legacy is
Right.
way more complex than just showing up.
And his first stop is Shechem,
Right?
this really strategically important city.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same place where Abraham first settled.
Wow.
He even buys land and builds an altar, just like his grandfather.
Yeah.
So it seems like he's picking up right where Abraham left off. But is it really that simple?
Well, if we look closer at what Jacob's doing,
Yeah.
a more nuanced picture kind of emerges.
Babe.
Like he buys the land for himself,
Oh.
not specifically for God.
Hmm.
And remember that vow he made at Bethel years ago?
Oh, yeah.
He promised to return and build a house of God there
Right.
and give 10% of everything he had.
It's like a tithe.
Yeah, tithe.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if settling in Shechem, even with the altar, is
Yeah.
really him fulfilling that promise.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So there's this underlying tension. Jacob is stepping into his role as heir to the promises,
Right.
but there's this sense of incompleteness, almost
Yeah.
like he's trying to find his own way
Yeah.
within that inheritance.
Right.
And it's here in Shechem that things get really complicated,
Yeah.
especially with his family.
Yeah. This is where Dinah, Jacob's daughter, enters the story.
Okay.
She goes out to see the women of Shechem
Right.
and she meets the ruler's son, who's also named Shechem. Now, their interaction, it's described in kind of ambiguous terms.
Oh,
Words like seized and humbled are used.
wait.
But we also see that Shechem is captivated by Dinah.
Yeah.
He genuinely wants to marry her.
So what are we supposed to make of this encounter?
Yeah.
Was it an assault, a seduction, or something in between?
It's tough to say.
Yeah.
The text doesn't give us a clear answer, and that's what makes it so interesting. It
Yeah.
forces us to think about the societal norms back then.
Right.
Arranged marriages were the standard, and
Yeah.
a woman's virginity was directly tied to her family's honor.
So regardless of Shechem's intentions,
Yeah.
the perception of this would have been huge for Jacob and his family.
Yeah, no wonder his sons are enraged when they hear about it.
It's probably the worst parenting decision ever,
Right.
considering what happens next.
So Shechem's father, Hamor, wants to smooth things over,
Okay.
and he really wants this marriage to happen.
Uh-huh.
He offers Jacob and his family incredible benefits,
Like, oh.
land, intermarriage, basically the keys to the kingdom.
You'd think that would be tempting,
Yeah.
especially for someone who just got back after 20 years.
It would seem so,
Right.
but Jacob's sons have a different plan.
Okay.
They strike this cunning bargain.
What do they do?
They demand that all the men of Shechem be circumcised if
Wow.
they want to intermarry and live peacefully with them.
And circumcision wasn't just some medical procedure for the Israelites.
Right.
It was a sign of the covenant with God,
Yeah.
a deeply religious act. So to demand this of the Shechemites was a pretty bold move.
It was fueled by deceit.
Really?
They used Dinah's situation to try and gain power and control.
Wow.
And the Shechemites, maybe blinded by the potential benefits, they
Yeah.
agree to it.
And that's when things take a really shocking turn.
Yeah.
Dinah's brothers, Simeon and Levi, they attack the city
Oh, wow.
while the men are recovering from their circumcisions.
Oh, no.
Totally vulnerable.
It's a horrific massacre.
Oh my God.
They kill every male. Wow.
Including Shechem and his father,
Oh, my.
plunder the city
Jeez.
and take the women and children captive.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder about their motives.
Right.
They say it's about defending family honor,
Uh-huh.
but it feels more like a power grab
Yeah.
using Dinah for their own gain.
The text itself seems to condemn it,
Yeah.
Jacob, even though he's more worried about the consequences for himself
Right.
than the ethics of it all.
Yeah.
He curses Simeon and Levi for their cruelty.
So we're left with this bloodbath and the
Yeah.
reality that even God's chosen people can do terrible things.
It's true.
And it's right then, when things seem to be spiraling,
Yeah.
that God steps in.
He tells Jacob to leave Shechem
Okay.
and go back to Bethel,
Hmm.
the place where he first met God.
Wow.
It's a call to return to the source.
Yeah.
To purify and realign himself after everything that's happened.
But before they leave Shechem,
yeah.
Jacob tells his family to purify themselves.
And get rid of their foreign gods.
Right.
And then he buries these idols under the oak tree at Shechem.
Wow.
The same spot where Abraham built his first altar.
That's powerful. Right. There's a lot of symbolism there.
Yeah.
It's about cleansing. Huh. Literally and metaphorically,
right.
Before entering this holy ground.
Yeah.
But it's also about connecting back to Abraham's legacy.
Okay.
Maybe trying to erase what happened with the massacre,
right.
By going back to the purity of his grandfather's actions.
So they get to Bethel.
Yeah.
And God reaffirms Jacob's new name, Israel.
Right.
And blesses him.
Uh-huh.
But this isn't just a repeat of the blessing to Abraham.
This time God uses the title El Shaddai.
What does that mean?
It's a name that's all about overwhelming power and strength.
Wow.
It's like God's declaring that the promise made to Abraham is now being passed down to Jacob,
right.
With all that it means for the future.
That's huge. It's like the weight of history is on Jacob's shoulders.
Yeah. But then just when things seem to be looking up,
tragedy
strikes.
What happens?
Rachel, Jacob's beloved wife.
Yeah.
She dies giving birth to Benjamin.
Oh, no.
And the place where she's buried, near Bethlehem, foreshadows how important that place will become.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You have to wonder how Jacob can handle another blow.
And then just when you think it can't get worse,
ooh.
Reuben, Jacob's oldest son,
yeah.
Does something shocking.
What does he do?
He sleeps with Bilhah.
Who's that?
One of Jacob's concubines.
Okay.
And Rachel's maidservant.
Hold on. That's not just a family fight. That's a direct challenge to Jacob's authority.
Exactly.
What was he thinking?
This act, it's about more than just lust or jealousy. Back then, sleeping with your father's concubine was a way to take power.
Wow.
A direct attack on the whole patriarchal structure.
Wow. That's a crazy cliffhanger. And the text just cuts off right there.
It does.
It leaves us with so many questions. What's going to happen to Reuben?
Right.
How will Jacob react?
Exactly.
And what does this mean for his family's future
and
the promise they carry?
Those are the questions we'll be looking at in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
We'll follow Jacob to Hebron, see another loss, and watch how he finally confronts his past as a new era begins.
Can't wait.
Me too.
So we left off with that shocking thing about Reuben.
Oh, yeah.
And that sudden cliffhanger in the text.
It really is like the calm before the storm.
Right. What happens next?
Well, the story picks up with Jacob going to Hebron.
Okay.
That's where his father Isaac has died.
It's hard to believe they're finally burying their dad together.
I know, right?
After all that happened between them.
It really is a powerful moment of reconciliation. And
yeah.
The timing is really important.
Okay.
The source points out that with Isaac gone,
yeah.
Jacob's the undisputed heir to the promises made to Abraham.
It's like the torch has been passed. But what about Esau? Does he have any claim left?
It's interesting you bring that up.
Yeah.
Remember how Esau chose to leave Canaan?
Yeah.
And settle in Seir?
Right.
He basically traded his birthright.
Right. First for a bowl of stew, and then by marrying outside the covenant.
Exactly.
By the time Isaac dies?
Yeah.
Jacob is the one living in Canaan.
Right.
Building altars, raising his family in the faith.
So all those years of scheming and fighting,
yeah.
In the end, Esau made his own choices.
Right.
And Jacob, even with his flaws,
yeah.
Ended up fulfilling the promise.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean Esau's gone from the story.
Right. He doesn't just disappear.
Yeah.
The text actually gives us this really detailed genealogy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of his descendants.
Okay.
We learn about his wives, his sons,
yeah.
Even the kings who ruled in Edom.
Which,
the nation his kids established.
That seems kind of random.
Right.
Why would the story focus on Esau's family?
Yeah.
If he's not a main character anymore?
Remember, we're looking at this passage.
Yeah. Within this larger study of the Pentateuch.
Right.
Understanding the history of Edom.
Yeah.
Is super important for stuff that happens later in the Bible.
I see. So it's not just a tangent.
No, it's like setting the stage.
Okay.
For future conflicts and relationships between the Israelites and the Edomites.
It's planting seeds.
Exactly.
That'll have big consequences later.
It shows that even though their paths went different ways,
yeah.
Those two brothers' legacies are still connected.
Right.
Jacob's descendants become Israel.
Uh-huh.
Esau's become Edom.
It's amazing how these little details connect to the bigger picture.
Right. Each layer adds a new dimension.
I'm talking about new layers.
Yeah.
The text also talks about the Horites. Oh, the people who originally lived in Seir, who Esau married into.
So we're getting a glimpse of the culture in Edom.
What's the point of that detail? It's important to remember.
Yeah.
The Horites weren't just some random group.
Oh.
They had their own history, their own families, their own leaders.
Yeah.
Their story gets mixed with Esau's and with the future of Jacob's descendants, too.
It's like the story's getting bigger.
Yeah.
Showing us more of the world Jacob's family lives in.
And that wider view is really important.
Okay.
Because we're about to enter a new time.
Okay.
We're moving away from the time of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
The patriarchs.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yeah. And into the story of a whole nation.
It feels like a turning point.
It is.
Are there any clues in the text about what to expect?
Mm. The last verse of this section, it's really simple, but also really deep.
What does it say?
It says, "But Jacob settled in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan."
Hmm.
It seems basic.
Yeah.
But it marks a big change.
Like the narrator saying,
yeah.
Okay, the stage is set. The players are in place. Now the real story starts.
Exactly. We're going from the stories of individuals to the story of Israel. And that story is full of ups and downs,
I bet.
Betrayals and blessings.
Wow, part of how God's promises come true.
And speaking of promises, I keep thinking about that vow Jacob made at Bethel.
Right.
He went back there.
Yeah.
But did he really do what he promised God?
That's a big question the study guide asks.
Right.
Jacob built an altar.
Mm-hmm.
He purified his household.
Right.
But what about that house of God he was going to build?
Mm.
And the tithe?
Yeah.
The text doesn't really say.
Okay.
It makes us think about what true obedience really means.
Makes you wonder, was it enough for Jacob to just go through the motions? Did he really get what God wanted from him?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
True obedience, it's not just about checking things off a list.
Right.
It's about understanding, really committing to living the way God wants.
So it's not just building altars and making sacrifices. It's about changing inside, aligning your heart with God's.
Exactly. And that makes you think, what does real obedience look like for us?
Hmm.
Are we just following the rules?
Yeah. Or are we trying to connect with God on a deeper level?
Man, this deep dive has taken us on a journey.
It really has.
Betrayal, violence, love, loss, and those moments where God steps in.
Yeah.
It's been a wild ride.
Jacob's story isn't over, though.
I know, right?
It keeps going, and his descendants will struggle with these same questions.
About faithfulness, obedience, what it means to be God's chosen people. It's like Jacob's life shows us what it means to be human.
In a way,
the struggles, the wins, how complicated faith can be.
And as we move into the story of Israel, we'll see those same things play out.
On a bigger scale.
Exactly.
This section of Genesis really sets the stage.
It does.
For understanding Israel's story.
All the choices people make, family stuff, how God's involved.
Yeah.
They all shape what happens.
It's amazing how those pieces fit together.
I know, right?
Jacob's life, the drama with his family, the political stuff, it all comes together.
It all connects.
It still means something to us today.
Absolutely.
Thousands of years later.
So as you keep studying the Pentateuch, keep those themes in mind.
Okay.
Look for how personal choices and family relationships and God's presence, they all affect Israel's destiny.
This has been a great deep dive.
It has.
So many insights, so many things to think about.
That really makes you think.
It's incredible how a few chapters from Genesis
can
make us think about what it means to be human
in
our relationship with God.
That's the power of these old texts.
Yeah.
They still speak to us today.
Yeah, they do.
They offer wisdom.
Yeah.
And they make us think about the big questions.
So until next time.
Yeah.
Keep thinking about those questions.
Because we'll be exploring.
Diving deep.